Again, this is Melody, and my co-host tonight is Katie, and our guest is Jackie Petru, and I'm going to let her describe more about herself, since she's going to be, she's been in radio for quite a while and has been out there seeking the truth for a long time. And Jackie, are you there?
I am, Melody.
And do you want to go ahead and describe to our audience a little bit about yourself?
I never sent you a bio, did I?
No. And I kept looking, and I didn't really see a good one on the internet that
I,
was
you know what? I don't know that I've ever written a bio, and I wouldn't even know how to do it. I mean, not that I can't write, but I'm not sure what's important to people. I guess first and foremost in my life was, you know, being a mom. I have two daughters. I have grandchildren, and they're my life. And I, basically most of my life, I was like most of the people that we know in this country. You know, I did my thing and raised my family, and I was divorced and wound up starting a business. I owned and operated fitness centers in Springfield, Illinois, and it was about 1991. It wasn't about, it was 1991 when I began to wake up. First of all, I had an insurance agent that started telling me stuff that I couldn't believe. And then he gave me a Spotlight newspaper. That was American Free Press today, but then it was the Spotlight. And I don't know what the date was back then, but Jimmy Carter was president. And the headline on the Spotlight.
Jimmy Carter?
Great big huge headline. It said, Carter's cocaine connection. And I read the article, and it talked about George Bush, Poppy Bush, and his drug running.
You're talking about, Jimmy Clinton, I mean, Bill Clinton? Didn't you say 91?
This was Jimmy Carter, honey.
Oh, wow. So then
Jimmy Carter, Carter's cocaine connection. That was the headline. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, you're a little bit faint.
Okay, well.
For me.
All right.
But anyway, I read this article, and I thought, this cannot be the truth. This is our president. And then I started, my logic started in, and I thought, wait a minute. They couldn't write this stuff if it wasn't true. Because, you know, they'd be sued. And then I thought, well, yeah, but if it is true, why haven't they all been burned out or something, you know, killed off or whatever? Well, then I got to realizing they boasted a subscription, I think, of about close to 100,000. And at that time, there were, how many million people are in this country today?
Well, I heard some figure at 250 million, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, but close to 300 million.
Okay.
I think at that time there were about 240 million.
Okay.
And I got to thinking about it. Well, 100,000 people, as compared to that many million, is a drop in the bucket. And so I started showing that article to people. Now, I was a respected businesswoman and, you know, respected for my intelligence. And people would look at me and say, do you believe that stuff, this garbage? I said, well, if it wasn't true, it couldn't be printed. Well, that was a real eye-opener for me. And then it was the 1991 when they started, you know, well, actually 90, when they were going to go to, quote, war with Iraq. And Melody, something just, it just wasn't right. And I know there had been a lot of wars going on, but for some reason, it was maybe my time to awaken from what I really believed was the American dream. And I began to wonder what the heck we were going to be doing. Why? Why are we going to Iraq? I mean, what has Iraq ever done to us? And is it a threat to this country? And I go around talking to people and asking about it. Basically, nobody really knew, except that Saddam Hussein was a monster. And as it turns out, he was not a monster. And just, you know, to confirm this, there's a book that was written about Saddam Hussein. It gives the whole history about Iraq. And it's in our, at sweetliberty.org in our book section. The whole book is there. And it just, it's a mind blower. But anyway, that was my awakening. And they started that war on the 16th of January. I'll never forget. Of 1991. And it was more a massacre, I guess, than anything. But,
well, you know, when you talk about Saddam not being the monster, I mean, I'm not refuting it, but at the same time, you sure heard a lot of other things that he, you know, did do, a lot of things that were...
Like genocide. He did genocide on the Kurds.
No. I've got a. In fact, it might even be in our. It might be in our Iraq section at the website.
Okay.
It was What do they call declassified paper from the CIA?
Okay. Now, wasn't
was
he?
Not,
was he a CIA asset?
Huh?
Wasn't he put in there by the CIA or by the our government?
Well, it's hard to say. Maybe he was, but if you read the book, about the woman who wrote the book. Lived over in Israel in a, what do you call them, commune? What do they call them over there?
Kibbutz.
Kibbutz. And she was dating an Israeli soldier. She had a friend that was there also. This woman was from New York, and I spoke with her personally. She said that they asked them, she and her friend, to go out to one of the groves, the trees, orchards, to pick dates. And they went out there. They were actually sent out there to find out if there were any plants, you know, the bombs planted, mines.
Okay.
Her girlfriend, I don't know if she died. I know that her legs were blown off. And she said her boyfriend came rushing out and said, oh, thank God, at least it wasn't you. He knew when they sent them out there that they were out there to walk around to see if they stepped on any mines. They used them. And she was so...
incensed?
You know, just blown away by it. She went to Iraq and stayed there for a while. And she's the one that wrote the book. And Saddam Hussein... the reason that they could not really tolerate him is that he was trying to start a pan-Arabian pact to where the money from the Middle East, instead of coming over to all the bankers over here, was going to stay there in the Middle East. And he also, you know, when you have a tyrant in a government, they want to keep the people stupid. They want to keep them illiterate. And from reading the book, it appears that most of the people in Iraq were unschooled. Saddam Hussein was building colleges and schools, and he was encouraging women to join into politics, bringing Iraq out of the Dark Ages, basically. So anyway, you know, I wasn't there, so I cannot confirm what I'm telling you, but... We did find out, it was actually admitted that when they were saying that the Iraqis were pulling babies out of incubators and stuff, that it was all a lie. But what the news can do, Melody, I mean, the news can create hatred amongst the people, so let's go to Iraq and kill all these people. It's what they do, honey. We've got a section in our website titled How Wars Are Made Behind the Scenes. And it's sort of a website of itself, almost each of our sections is. There's a lot of history in there, and there's a lot of information there that would blow just anybody's mind away. It did mine. The more you know, the more you realize that everything we thought was true as far as history, we were lied to. We were born into lies.
That, you know, I have to agree with a lot of that. I just wasn't aware of the part on the on Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go into, when you have some time, go into that section.
Okay.
And read some of the stuff there, and or read the book. The book isn't a long book.
Okay.
It isn't long at all. And it even tells the history of Kuwait, which was always a part of Iraq. And it was the Brits, it was England that decided, I forget when the heck it was, that they were going to make it its own little province.
Was that back during the Balfour Agreement?
They didn't get anybody's permission to do that. And then what started the war is that Kuwait was drilling oil, and they were drilling at an angle, and they were drilling oil out of Iraq. And Saddam Hussein was trying to get them to stop. And I don't know, oh gosh, what's her name? Oh gosh, I know her name. Oh, it was the... Oh boy, the name is. Anyway, this was the woman who was the U.S. ambassador to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Her name might pop in my head, but anyway, she talked with Saddam. This was in the newspapers, Melody.
Uh-huh.
What year are we in here?
Pardon?
What year?
We're in 91, honey, mm-hmm. or 89 or 90. Excuse me.
Okay, so is that Albright?
Her name is going to pop. Okay. Her name will pop into my head in a minute. You know, I've figured out our brains are like computers, and sometimes the files don't pull up as quickly as you'd like.
Yeah, they're on delay.
Yeah, but once you do a search, it'll always pop up. Well, anyway, Saddam Hussein was taught, he didn't want to get the U.S. ticked off at him, of course. And he was telling her what the problem was. And he said, if they don't stop drilling our oil, we're going to have to go and we're re-annex Kuwait, whatever. And she said, well, basically, we're not interested in your border skirmishes. In other words, they really gave him total open, it's okay with us, we're not going to mess with it. And as soon as he did it, that's when George Bush made his move.
So they set him up.
They said, oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my awakening. And I was very concerned. I was so concerned. Didn't know what to do. And I was walking through my kitchen one day. I still had my business. My girls were grown. And I just said a prayer, and I said, Father, please, if there's something. Because I realized, you know, when that war started, I sat there watching it, and I thought, oh, my God. You know, if everybody is like me, I'm nothing but a walking complaint, basically. I do nothing. I just complain. And I thought, if everybody is like me, we're going to lose it all. I remember hearing George Bush do his, that was September 11th. 911 in 89 about the New World Order. A New World Order is coming into view. And I sat there listening to that, and I thought, oh, my God, they're even saying it on the air today. They're saying it out loud. And I didn't know anybody who knew anything. So, you know, you feel pretty alone as you're awakening into this. And anyway, I was walking through my kitchen. I asked in a prayer, Father, please, if there is something that you would have me do for my country, and I don't even know what that would do, but if there's something that I could or should be doing, please see to it that I do it. And Melody, 2 weeks later, it was like my whole world flipped right upside down, honey. And I wound up getting involved in a presidential election, and that was in with Bo Greitz in 1992. But during that time, meeting so many people who were in the know and waking up more and more and more. So after that election, we started the CDR, Council on Domestic Relations. That's my little 8-month-old Mona. I don't know what her problem is, but excuse me, honey.
Okay.
She has a habit of doing this when I get on the telephone.
Jealous.
And the Bo Greitz campaign, we actually got in touch with a lot of people around the country, and they were people who were aware. And so we started the CDR, which was to be a national networking organization. At that time, it was faxes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because the Internet hadn't gotten out yet, and it was a beautiful thing. And so at the very beginning of 1993, and I had read an article in 92 about the Constitutional Convention, the CONCON,
mm-hmm.
and the effort to open the Constitutional Convention. It was Arch Roberts. In fact, he lived there in Colorado. And Colonel Arch Roberts, it was a newsletter that he had written, and it scared the heck out of me. So when we started the CDR, I talked to Dan Druck, who was the national co-director, and we called ourselves an organization. I don't know that we were ever organized, but I do know that miracles happened with that networking. But anyway, I told him I would like to look into this CONCON thing, because it was quite frightening. And so I started calling around to see who I could talk to that could fill me in. And I met a man in Chicago by phone. We never met personally, Doug Kelly. And Doug was the one, I say, that because in 1983, Missouri was the what, 32nd state. In order to open a constitutional convention, it takes 34 states calling for it.
Okay.
And Missouri was the 32nd state to do that. So that meant two more states, and they're, according to the Constitution, they had to open a constitutional convention. Could have been the end of our Constitution as we know it. And Doug became my mentor. I called him up, and he was not very receptive at first. I said, Doug, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but this scares me, it frightens me, and I wonder if there's... I said, we have contacts all over the country, and I wonder if there's something we can do to help. And then Doug said, well, I think this is a miracle, because he said that Ohio... The state of Ohio had a CONCON resolution all ready to go as soon as their session opened. Well, we were having national conference calls, and at that time they weren't free, Melody. It was $30 an hour, honey. And
yeah.
we had anywhere from 50 to 75 people on these conference calls, but they would have them in meeting places and put them on loudspeakers. So we could have 300 or 400 people listening, and we had Doug on as our very first guest. And that thing opened, and that CONCON resolution hit, and we had calls going in from all over the country. And in 1993, 12 states wound up introducing these. They were making a play. They were making their big play to get into the Constitution, and every single one of them were stopped. And that was a miracle as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, but now they're trying to do it again?
Well, we're not... let me just go just a couple steps further here.
Okay.
We got it stopped in 93. And in 94, Charlie Duke... Do you know who Charlie Duke was? Representative... Charlie Duke from Colorado?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
Huh?
I don't, but you
I
did.
Do.
Well,
okay.
He was a hero around this country, Melody.
Huh.
What he did is he introduced a resolution in Colorado, the 10th Amendment State Sovereignty Resolution. It's a beautiful piece of work, and it's there at our website. Actually, it's in the states' rights section. Well, that thing... We got on that right away. they passed it in Colorado, was the first state, and that baby went around the country like a whirlwind. Basically what it was, it wasn't a bill, wasn't an act, it didn't have force of law, it was a resolution that confirmed the power of the states and the limited power that the U.S. government has. Basically, stay where you belong. You know, in other words, if you look at the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, there are 18 clauses, and that says what the U.S. Congress can do. That's all. They don't have any right to be dabbling in education. There's nothing in there that says they can. Gun bills? No, not at all. And I'll tell you the one section, the one clause in there, is this, I think it's the 17th. This is coming out of my memory banks now. But basically what it says, paraphrasing, is that the U.S. Congress can legislate in all matters whatsoever for Washington, D.C., in the federal zone, and territories and possessions. So when the U.S. Congress passes so many of these bills, they aren't mandated to the states. They cannot mandate to the states. But they can pass them. Their resolutions, HR is a House resolution. It's not a bill. But they can do that, and it applies to Washington, D.C., and it applies to territories and possessions, not to the several states of the United States. See?
So do you?
And so that's what the 10th Amendment resolution did. And it was a beautiful thing. I think there were 40 some states. There were a lot of states that passed it through both houses, and I think there were 40 some states altogether, 42 something like that, that actually had it introduced and passed through maybe one of their chambers. And what happened is our networking, it just exploded. It just absolutely exploded. People were thrilled that they could finally be working for something instead of, quote, against something. And then towards the end of 1994, Charlie and I were talking on the phone, and he had told me about Governor Leavitt from Utah. He had this plan to have to hold a conference of states, and he said, "Jackie," he said, "this is they're going for a backdoor attempt for a constitutional convention." And I said, "They can't do that, Charlie." I said, "Check your constitution," and he said, "Don't you understand? Don't you know history? Do you know what happened at the first Well, maybe I got that in civics, but I sure didn't remember it. Am I talking too much here, honey?
No, keep going.
Have questions or?
I'll present them when they come.
Oh, okay. So anyway, he convinced me the history of our Constitution, how it came about back in 1787. Actually, in 1786, they called for a conference of states. At that time, the United States government was the Continental Congress, and it had literally no power unless the states said okay. There were just a couple things that it could do, and so then in 1776, they called for a conference of states in Maryland. And not enough delegates came, so they tried it again in historic Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. Well, these delegates to that convention were given strict orders. They were there only to amend the articles of the Continental Congress, whatever they called it at that time. Anyway, what it did is it became a runaway convention. And what happened, and you know, I don't mean to sound like I'm not favorable to our framers, but from the information that I have today, we were pretty much framed. I thought it was cool. You know, they got I don't know if you've ever been to Philadelphia. When my grandchildren visited one summer, we took them down there. It was my first trip, and we went into Freedom Hall. It was a little 40 by 40 foot room. There were 55 men in that room, and it was in the heat of the sultry Philadelphia summer. Started in May, went through October. They closed the windows and locked the doors.
Oh, my goodness.
Excuse me, nailed the window shut. So nobody could hear what they were doing. And what they did is they formed a committee of the whole. And then they took a vote. And in fact, George Washington was the chairman of that committee. And they took a vote. And they all voted that the Articles of Confederation are hereby now null and void. And there came the Constitution. Now, when you look at the Constitution itself, you read the Constitution, you see that the Constitution itself just is a blueprint and lays out what the federal government can do. That's what it was. And then they couldn't get it ratified, you see, because there was nothing in it for the states. Oh, there were a couple things in there, you know, for the states. But anyway, the states would not ratify it. A couple of states did ratify it, but they ratified it with exceptions. In other words, they wanted the amendments, the first 10 articles of amendments, which we call today our Bill of Rights. And until that was done, the Constitution was not fully ratified. So you see, it's the Bill of Rights that says what the federal government may not do. The Ninth and Tenth Amendments, if you read them, are just totally powerful. And that's what they want to get into. That's why they want to have a constitutional convention.
So they're after the Bill of Rights, primarily, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Basically, and see the conference of states that they were calling, they literally called it. We were having this conference of states in historic Pennsylvania. Do you know what dates it was set for? August 24th through the 26th, I think. I could be off a day or two, but it was the 50th anniversary of the United Nations when the U.S. allegedly joined the United Nations. And they literally had it set up to where they could have turned that right into a constitutional convention. Now, at our website at sweetliberty.org, there is, and this isn't an advertisement, we get no money from this, we have no advertisers on it, so I'm not trying to promote the sweetliberty.org other than for the wonderful information that's in there. But there's, I lost my train of thought. The Conference of States.
Uh-huh. Well, you were talking about the dates in the UN and
at the website. Yeah. If you go to the Constitutional Convention section, all the information is in there about the Conference of States in 1995. They thought they were going to have it.
Uh-huh.
They were absolutely sure that they were going to have it. And what they did is they lied to state legislators, and they told state legislators that it was going to put the teeth into the 10th Amendment resolution.
Now,
I know what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. The Constitution for the New States of America. It's waiting in the wings, Melody, and we have the whole thing in there. That's what I wanted to mention, honey.
Would you say it again, please?
The Constitution for the New States of America.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I see it here on the site.
Uh-huh.
Okay, all right.
That is a piece of work.
Okay, and so it says, in the event you would be inclined to dismiss the relevance of the proposed new Constitution, bear in mind that it was the product of a tax-exempt think tank which took 10 years and $25 million and the collaboration of over 100 like-minded individuals. It would be folly to believe this investment is intended to be merely an exercise in political theory.
That's right.
So the frightening reality is the planners are serious in their efforts to impose a new constitution upon the people of America as we enter into the 21st century. And this was written by Colonel Arch Roberts.
Yes.
Now, one,
I think Colonel Roberts may not be with us in this realm today.
Uh-huh.
I'm not really sure, but he did some real powerful work. And it was because of his newsletter that woke me up to the Con-Con and getting involved in it. But, you know, when you, I said that prayer, and it felt, it, when I look back at it, it's like we were just being led into whatever direction that we were supposed to be going. And not that we were walking around like robots or something, but I'm going to let these girls out. Give me just a second here, honey.
Well, while we're at it, I'm going to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHIN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And support for KHIN and TruthQuest is brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property, Inc.'s Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown Salida. Find out more at coloradohomeproperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. Well, did we lose you, Jackie?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, okay, go
Melody.
Ahead.
Okay. No, I was thinking that maybe some of your listeners might be interested in a few of those quotes that are in there. You've got that. Do you have it handy?
Okay. Now, are you talking about on that page particularly? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
for well, you remember the, you know, I can pull it up if you want me to, the article that I sent you?
Uh-huh. I have that.
Okay. Because I quoted from it.
Okay. And so...
In there.
Well, I guess I'm not following you on which what part
okay.
you're wanting me to
from
look at.
From the Constitution for the New States of America.
Okay.
For example, Article 1A, Section 8, the practice of religion shall be privileged.
Okay. Oh, so you're are you going through the new? Okay, you're going through the new Constitution. Okay.
Just a couple of really. Article 1A, Section 11, education shall be provided at public expense for those who meet appropriate tests of eligibility. Now, here's the big one. Article 1B, Section 8, bearing of arms shall be confined to the police, members of the armed forces, and those licensed under law.
Well, I was just listening to a program today where they were talking about those who are on the no-fly list are now being declined for the ability to bear arms.
Now, how would you find out if you're on the no-fly list?
I guess you have to try to fly.
I'd be afraid to do that. With our website being blocked, we've had, you know, when you look at your stats on your website and you see the Department of Defense and, you know, those different, of course, I'm sure the government, I'm sure the government departments monitor all the websites, but it's a little, I don't know that I'd want to go try to fly.
Well,
but it would be nice if we knew. Now, if you would like to bring it up, well, first of all, the maybe the history of what they did, how they tried to do this, it started back
back in the 70s?
Yeah, 74.
Mm-hmm. Because I was listening to a program done with Darren Weeks and Nancy Levant, and they covered this pretty well. Were you on that program too?
Probably. Kathy? Well, I was on one of them, hon.
Yeah, and I think you might have been on that one.
Yeah.
It comes on so early in the morning.
Okay. look at the timeline here. They took the 10 years. Beginning in 1964, and it was the Ford Foundation that founded the commission to write a new constitution.
That was
and it literally took them 10 years to get 40 drafts before they got the one they wanted. Now, like Colonel Roberts said, it would be folly to think that that was just a, you know, whatever. So it took 10 years, and in 1974 was when they had it finished. And then there was a book that was published, The Emerging Constitution by Rexford Tugwell. And he was, Rexford Tugwell. He had his position in the federal government was. Secretary of Agriculture.
Yeah,
okay, he was the Secretary of Agriculture. So then the same year...
While you're at it, it says on this particular section, it says use of all land, public and private, will be controlled by the federal government in the future.
That's right.
Yeah. And private control, as he concluded, has failed to use wisely its control of the land. We are preparing a land program not merely for the benefit of those who held title to it, but for the greater welfare of all the citizens of the country.
And notice the word held title?
Uh-huh.
It's in the past tense. And then you look in the new state's constitution, Article 1A, Section 12, no property shall be taken without compensation. It doesn't say anything about just or fair. And then they talk about taxes on land may be at higher rates than those on its improvements, meaning the land is more valuable than the buildings. And then in Article 9, Section 2, it says, areas necessary for the uses of government may be acquired at its valuation and may be maintained as the public interest may require. So they have their reasons for everything that they do. And then, of course, regional governance. I think you had somebody on talking about regionalism because I was going through your archives tonight.
Uh-huh.
We've got a whole section at sweetliberty.org on regional governance. And under the new state's constitution, there are no longer states, individual states. There are regions. Some of them are combined and some of them are divided. It eliminate the present states, their boundaries, and our state governments. And, of course, there won't be local governments, and they will be appointed bureaucrats. And in that new state's constitution, some of the bureaucrats' titles are, quote, regulators, watchkeepers, overseers. I mean, it sounds very Orwellian, doesn't it, Melody?
Yeah, and I was trying to pull up my website because I have a quote from Stalin on there that I thought was kind of interesting on regionalism. Divide the world into regional groups is a transitional state to world government. Populations will more readily abandon their national loyalty to a vague regional loyalty than they will for a world of authority. Later, the regions can be brought together all the way into a single world dictator. And
that's
this is
right.
By Stalin in 1942. And the really subtle thing about this whole thing is I see this regionalism. I mean, you send your IRS forms to one region, then they switch it to another region, then they make another region. And I'm...
Well, I'll tell you what, there are 10 regions. The United States has been divided into 10 federal regions. And each of those 10 federal regions has a government department, like housing and urban development. Every department that exists in the federal government exists in the region within the state. And the way it looked to me when I saw it with my mind's eye, 10 mini Washington, D.C.s within the United States. There is an article...
And this is very similar to how the Soviet Union was set up, correct?
Well, yes. The Soviet Union was a huge laboratory for the rest of the world. There is an article at the beginning of the section on regional governance at Sweet Liberty. The sections, when you go into the website, Melody,
uh-huh.
If you scroll down the left side, all the sections are listed there.
Okay.
And then articles pertaining to those sections. So you can find states' rights, regional governance, any of the first one is children. That's our children because to me, there's nothing more precious, sacred, and important than our children. But there's an article that I wrote explaining in a thumbnail sketch of regional governance, and I've had even state legislators thank me for it and say it helped them to understand it, because they don't know what's going on, and they're all in the dark. And there's also a book in that same section written by Phoebe Courtney, and interestingly, Phoebe was from Colorado, and it's called Beware Metro Government. I got permission, written permission from her to transcribe the book, and it's on our website there, Beware Metro Government, and it explains it in layman's terms. Do you know that I didn't know this? I don't know if you know it, but do you know that back at that time, that was under Nixon in the 70s, I guess, around that time? Do you know that they even the state income tax is sent to the federal government, or the banks, I guess you'd say, the Federal Reserve?
And so how do the states get it back? Is that
they
how?
Get it back with... with strings attached.
Is that
Melody.
Like the grants?
They get it back with strings attached. In other words, I talked to one of my state rep in Illinois when I lived in Illinois, and I was asked, I went to ask him if he would sponsor the 10th Amendment resolution. He said, are you kidding me? I mean, he just wouldn't have any part of it. I did find a guy that did it, and it did pass in Illinois, but he got to telling me that he said, if the federal government wants us to do something and we won't do it, he said, right now they are holding $780 million for our road work because we haven't complied with one of their whatever. So you see, well, and it all goes through the regions also. It goes down into the regions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a blackmail situation?
Pardon?
It's kind of like a blackmail situation?
Oh, you know what? In the states' rights section, this was a newspaper article I found. And, you know, okay, I'll tell you, I got this from, I know you've had Joan Vian on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Linda Liotta and she were very close friends. They live close to each other there. Linda found this in the archives, and it was when Hillary Clinton, behind the closed doors, was trying to lay out, the national health care plan.
Mm-hmm.
They sent a letter to the Justice Department and asked if the government could force the states, could mandate. And the Justice Department sent back, I've got the whole thing here. Mm-hmm. Linda sent me a copy of it, but I excerpted it, and it's on the website. Basically, what they said is the 10th Amendment has settled that answer. No, the federal government cannot mandate to the states, but the states can be encouraged, bribed, and blackmailed.
And so, but can you imagine how the leveraging that these guys would do with that $700 and some million if they did it to every state or whoever? So, I mean, instead of being just it going to one area, they could be promising it to all of them, and they're all thinking they're going to get this carrot, and they're going to find out it's not what they thought it was.
This was road taxes that they took out of the state that they were supposed to send back, but they wouldn't. And then I found a newspaper article that talked about the seat belts. And that article, I had to put it in there because it confirmed what the Justice Department said to Hillary's health care thing, is that the states can be encouraged. Encouraged, bribed, and threatened. I don't think it said blackmailed, honey, excuse me. But, yes, that's exactly what happens.
What's the difference between threatened and blackmailed?
Not much, is there?
well,
Well, blackmail, though, is like you've done something really wrong, and if you don't pay me money, I'm going to tell everybody.
Okay.
And threats are a different thing. If you don't do this, you're not getting your money.
Yeah, and
okay.
Threats can come for no reason at all, just you standing there.
Right.
You know, whether you have anything to offer or not, they can just threaten you.
Right, right.
But blackmail is an exchange.
Right. Well, anyway, I know I get way off track. I go around and around and then come back to where I started. But so we talked about the book, The Emerging Constitution, that was published with the New States Constitution in it in 1974. And that same year, Nelson Rockefeller, who was the vice president at the time, he engineered a resolution calling for an unlimited CONCON, that's the short for a constitutional convention, that was to be held in 1976. Now, I was a sleeper at the time. I knew nothing about that, but evidently there was a tremendous outcry against it, and they couldn't get it done, so that's when they began lobbying the states the resolution that we've watched, is a resolution calling for a constitutional convention for the sole purpose of adding a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. Well, number one, if they were following the Constitution, they wouldn't need a balanced budget amendment. But number two, they can't control it. Once a constitutional convention is opened, there is no controlling it. And the first perfect example was what happened back in 1787.
And so there's a good reason for them not to even balance the budget up to that point, because that's a way to kind of leverage them getting this constitutional convention in.
Yeah. There's a letter that was sent to Phyllis Schlafly from Chief Justice Warnberger regarding the Constitutional Convention. He said, and this is a quote from his letter, "There is no effective way to limit or muzzle the actions of a Constitutional Convention. Convention could make its own rules, set its own agenda. After a convention is convened, it'll be too late to stop the convention if we don't like its agenda." Now, there's...
Well, I'll tell you right now, in the climate that's going on, I wouldn't trust anything. anything that's been coming out of a Congress and executive orders and things like that, to call something together like that, chances are real good we're not going to get what we want.
And out on your website, under "What Would America Look Like Under the Constitution for the New States of America,"
uh-huh.
One of the things you put under Depression, Senator Kasbaum's CCS.
Thank you.
They want to wait.
Katie, is that you, hon?
Yeah. Yes.
I was looking for that. Say it.
Okay. Senator Kasbaum's CCS says they want to wait until the U.S. is in a 1929-type depression to call a convention, because only then would the public accept the radical changes. From your view, do you view we're almost at that point now?
We are, don't you?
No question, but I just kind of look at it and go, well, here it is, and here we are.
Listen, it gets very overwhelming at times. I don't know that any of us could actually imagine what it could become, what we're experiencing today. I remember getting one email, and one of the financial advisors said that this crisis is going to make 1929 look like a walk in the park. And it is worldwide. They've been having riots in Iceland and France.
Balkans.
This is created. I don't know if it's okay that I say this, but I can tell you this. Unequivocally, the plans for this have been laid for a long time.
Oh, you know. And go ahead. We say it all the time.
Oh, good. Okay, thank you. And I didn't know how much it would be okay to say of the truth. But this is our concern, and you ask, Katie, I think you asked before, you know, or maybe Melody, it was you, are they trying it again? Ohio. And I find that interesting because that was the first state out of the box in 1993. Ohio has already introduced one, and it has not been passed yet, but it hasn't been tabled either. And then Virginia, the state of Virginia, they had actually rescinded theirs, which I didn't know at the time, you know, we got back into this, because it's been 16 years, let's face it. And I thought maybe it's a dead deal. Well, now when you go back into all this information and you see that statement by Kassebaum that we want to wait until the country is in a 1929-like depression, because otherwise the people will not accept the changes we're going to make. That's frightening. And the thing is, we have to watch them like hawks, because the Conference of States in 1995, let me tell you something, we were expecting it, we knew it. And we were alerting people through via the fax network to watch for it, because it's going to be coming into your states. And by the second week in January, there were 12 states that had already passed it. I said, uh-uh, this is it. We've had it. We've lost it. And thank God again, we got on it. The networking, we could put hundreds of faxes and phone calls into a state legislator's office in any given day. And it was a miraculous thing, and it was stopped. But what they were doing, and I know I started on this and wound myself off it, they were telling the legislators that this was going to put the teeth in the 10th Amendment resolution. They were bypassing committees and just bringing it to floor for vote. And the state legislators, totally unaware of what they were doing, were just passing this thing. And that's what made it so dangerous. They lie to them.
Okay, now,
we have to be very vigilant. Now, there's some good news here, guys, mm-hmm. because what I've been contacted by several people, and there have been 6 or 7 other states that have rescinded their CONCON resolutions. And I got a call from a man in Texas this past week. Last week, and he said that he's very politically involved, and he knows that he can get it done. And he said he's going to have Texas rescind it, get theirs rescinded. And there's a man working here in Pennsylvania to get Pennsylvania's rescinded.
So state by state, if the people come together and get this rescinded, CONCON would not take place, or would it still take place just without their cooperation?
I don't know if you hear a bang, but it's actually a puppy jumping up the window for me to go let them in. Just give me a second here. You know, when I was on the...
Well, at this point, Melody, maybe go ahead and give identification.
Okay, this is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida. And again, support for Kahan and Truth Quest is brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property Inc.'s Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown Salida. Find out more at coloradohomeproperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. And this is Truth Quest with Melody, and my co-host is Katie O'Brien, and our guest is Jackie Petru, and we're speaking about the Continental Convention and constitutional convention, and this is my next subject I want to get on here, is because there's something very similar to it that I want to address. But the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the CAHIN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. Are you back, Jackie? No?
Still with puppy.
I'm here.
Okay.
Melody.
Okay. One of the things that I've run across, and I know it has me confused, even though I'm sitting here with the differentiation in front of me, because I had contacted Bob Schultz, who's been behind this Continental Congress. Well, isn't the Continental Congress that got us in trouble with the Constitutional Convention in the first place?
You know what? I don't know what this Continental Congress thing is all about, but he scares me.
Well, I'm telling you, this
Bob Schultz scares me. Let me give you an experience that I had with him, and I think the heavenly hosts, the universe, our creator, it's just so awesome how this information comes to us, and then later you understand why. But when we were New York, he was in New York, you know, and he had the All County Taxpayers Association. It was called ACTA. He was networked by counties in New York. That's a feat. That's a real accomplishment. And I was given Bob's name to contact him to get the facts out to his people, you know, to call to stop the Constitution and the resolution in New York. One of the eastern border states, I'm not sure if it was New York or whichever one of them, has made the claim some time ago that they want to be the last state to pass it, to start, you know, get the convention opened. So I called Bob and I told him, you know, who I was, and there was a CONCON resolution and da 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 da, and would he please, if I faxed it to him, would he get it out to his networkers so that they could make the calls? And he said, well, I don't have time. He said, we're working on a project. I said, Bob, I said, this is critical. Our Constitution is about to go down the tubes. Mm-hmm. And this is just a 2-page action alert. We've got the phone numbers on there. It won't take more than 10 minutes of any one of your networkers' times to make these telephone calls. He just didn't want anything to do with it. And I thought, well, okay, that's all I need to know about Bob Schultz. But then probably about 4 or 5 years later, we were living here in Pennsylvania, and I was asked to go up to New York, because we're right up by the New York state line, into New York to a town that was having some type of a symposium coming up to talk about regional governance to the group. They had different speakers. I was just one. And so we were there, and Sandra Stika, she's a lawyer, an attorney from New York, Grand Island, New York. I talked about regionalism and the, you know, its physical aspects. Her talk was about the economic aspects of regionalism. But Sandy was talking to the group, and she said that there is a movement, there's going to be coming up a referendum for vote for a state constitutional convention. And she said Bob Schultz, who's a man that's very, you know, well-networked, is promoting this. And Sandy was smart, because she didn't say anything negatively about him, but she encouraged anybody there who is connected with ACTA to please get a hold of people and let them know how dangerous this is. There's never been a state constitutional convention since the states were formed that has done anything but destroy our constitutional rights. And come to find out, Sandy, she and I, you know, we, a bunch of us had dinner together, and she told me about him, and she said, this whole program that they want to do, the changes to make to the state constitution are coming from the Rockefellers, the Rockefeller Institute or whatever is there in New York. And she said Bob Schultz was at one of their meetings. She connected Bob Schultz with Rockefeller. And so I thought, well, that just confirmed. I mean, I didn't have any proof about anything about him, but it confirmed my if you would call it opinion, but a knowing. And this man, he's not for Americans, not for America, not the America that we're for. And
well, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I've run across this numerous times, because this group that's doing this Continental Congress seemed to have co-opted from the movie V. Are you familiar with this? Utilizing some of the drama from the movie V.
Is that V for, like Victory?
V for Vendetta.
Vendetta. You know, I've heard about it. I haven't watched it. Maybe I should.
Yeah, you should.
I'm a Netflix member.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I'm out in the country, so I have to order my DVDs by mail. I will order it.
Because no. Because what it is when I would hear somebody talking about the CONCON. Well, Continental Congress is a CONCON, just like a Constitutional Convention is a CONCON. I mean, if you take
the
three, I know they're different, but what I'm trying to say is they both start with con.
Yeah. and not only that, but the Continental Congress was the government that they got rid of with the first Constitutional Convention.
Right. So something, some kind of a subversion is going on here, and
I would like to share with you. And there is, it's my word. This is, what do they call this in a court that they won't accept? Hearsay.
Okay.
Well, you remember when the We the People had taken out that one page, whole page ad?
Okay, because he's with We the People. Right?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
And remember the whole page ad in USA Today?
Uh-huh.
You don't have to file income tax.
Okay, now that
I mean,
one.
That was basically what the whole thing was about.
Uh-huh.
My husband, who passed 6 years ago this month, the Federal Reserve was his nemesis. And anytime he talked to anybody, the first thing that he wanted them to know about was the Federal Reserve, that it isn't federal and there is no reserve. But anyway, he was really put out and out of sorts because that whole full-page ad never mentioned the Federal Reserve. He said, how can you talk about the IRS without mentioning the Federal Reserve? I want you to call DV. I met DV Kidd, never met her personally. When I say I meet somebody, it's usually by telephone, but we met during the Bogue Rights campaign in 1992. And so we've known each other ever since then. And DV was the big push in 94 on the Federal Reserve thing. Well, anyway, he wanted me to call DV, find out why did you not mention the Federal Reserve. So when I was talking to DV, she said Bob didn't want to. She said he didn't want to put too much information in the ad because he didn't want to confuse people. I said, well, Chuck had a good question. How in the world, DV, can you talk about the IRS without mentioning the Federal Reserve, because the IRS is the collection arm of the Federal Reserve? Well, Bob didn't want to. I said, what, is Bob calling all the shots? And here's what DV told me. She said an anonymous individual opened a trust for the work, and Bob Schultz is the only person who can decide where the money is going.
So he's an agent for Rockefeller.
Well, I don't know who that anonymous person is, Melody, but, you know, it just blew me away. And I'll tell you something else that blew me away. They were telling people, and it is pretty well established, it's becoming established, there's no law that they can present that that says anybody has to file a 1040 reporting form. However, they were saying that in the newspapers, that you don't have to file a 1040 reporting form. So I'm talking to Devi, and she's the secretary of this thing. I think she had actually moved to Maryland. She was one of the national officers or something, and she told me that she and her husband were filing because they couldn't afford to lose his pension and their home and all their savings. And I thought, oh, my God. So this woman is going around the country with this group that's telling people they don't have to file. Has she told people? Well, we're filing because we don't want to lose everything we have. It's very deceitful, Melody.
Well, and I, you know, that kind of, I had an interesting she put out a really good article this morning that was backing Walter Burian on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
Yeah, I got that email. I didn't read it, but that's good.
And, you know, and there's some things that I definitely don't agree with her on in her politics, but I don't consider that, you know, I mean, if she's out there doing the work and trying to get the word out, I you know, I'm not going to begrudge somebody doing that. But
right.
It certainly does make one wonder.
When you're with an organization encouraging people not to file when you're filing yourself because you don't want to lose all your material goods, it's a little bit contradictory as far as I'm concerned. I was very shocked that she even told me that.
Well, that's why it's really important to start, when you start looking at any of, almost any sizable organization has already been compromised in some way, form, or another.
And well, you know, when we started the CDR, we were going to have members. We had a newsletter for a while. We were going to have members. And there was a man from California who knew, understood all of the crime laws, etc., and he warned me about having members. He said, Jackie, he said, anybody that is a member of the Council on Domestic Relations, that name came up as an antithesis to the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, anybody that is a member that would do commit a crime, let's say, he said, you would be liable. So we just never did it. We canceled memberships, and the membership was the cost of the newsletter anyway, but we explained that we were not going to have members because you get infiltrated. So we were just an unorganized organization, Melody, and it did its thing.
Well,
maybe you don't need members because everybody should be a part of it.
Should be a what, Katie?
Should be part of it.
Yes.
So everybody actually is a member, you know?
Yes.
Well, yeah. It definitely makes one wonder one of the most intriguing parts of doing some of the research that I've done is when you start looking into some of these corporations and their CEOs and board of directors and that sort of thing. They don't have to really even write much information, but when you start seeing the lists and what they belong to and this sort of thing, it starts to tell its own story. And some of these people are on so many different corporate boards and CEO,
yeah.
and have gone from one to another to another to another. This is where you start to see a picture. Well, one of the ones that I And this was also in what I sent you today or something, was about Hank Paulson being on the Nature Conservancy. And here he has been the Secretary of the Treasury, and look what he did there. And then he goes on, and he was on Goldman Sachs, look what he did there.
Yeah.
And so...
It's a good old boys club, Melody.
Well, if he's been on the Nature Conservancy, it doesn't look good for what's going to happen with that. Because that's one of your largest landowning organizations in the world. It's very wealthy. So
yes, the Nature Conservancy is buying up land. You know, they've got a web that they have. I want to take a look and see if the article I'm thinking of is at the website. We've got one section that never... We never really added a lot to, and it's about environmentalism.
Uh-huh.
Environment. Let me go over here. Let me see. Who owns the environmentalist movement? Yeah. I think this is it. This could be it. I don't know.
Well, you know, just the whole thing is when if they're really after property rights, because I mean, what we were reading here that's in this Constitution that they want to implement, and then you have the gutting of the country financially. I mean, we're being set up for receivership.
We're being set up to be taken down. I would recommend. This article that I just mentioned.
I mean, this is a hostile takeover. That's how they would do it.
Oh, yes. Do you know, I noticed that you had Alan Watt
mm-hmm.
on your, as a guest.
Right.
Well, Alan started broadcasting, or not broadcasting, but being
working
a guest
with you
on Sweet Liberty radio broadcast back in 98. And he made a statement that I never doubted. I just did not doubt it, not in 98, but, you know, shortly thereafter. He said the United States was founded to bring in the New World Order. And when they are close enough to their plan being fully implemented, they intend to destroy America and bring Americans to their knees.
Well,
and I got a chill when he said it because it had a ring of truth.
Well, I don't doubt it. I mean,
nope.
Alan Watt is very well schooled
he's very knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
This article that I'm talking about, if you go into the website sweetliberty.org, into environment, who owns the environmentalist movement, that's a mind blower.
Okay, I'll have to look at that one. Because, I mean, I do know that the environmental movement goes back into the 1800s.
Wasn't that Teddy Bear?
Who?
Was Theodore Roosevelt Teddy?
Well, no, I mean back into Darwin's time.
Oh, yeah.
And then what's kind of interesting is when you saw when the Federal Reserve was formed and that sort of thing, ultimately Rockefeller actually bought up the country in a sense. When they tried, and this is just my feeling here, and my observation is that
your understanding of it, yeah.
Right, that when they tried to break up all those monopolies, that was his way of saying, oh, well, you know, if you're going to do that to me, then I'll just buy you.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Rockefeller probably is, of course they are an extremely wealthy, powerful family, but it seems that it started with the Rothschilds.
Oh, well, the Rothschilds, they're an arm of the Rothschilds.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
They're like the American arm.
Yeah.
And so when they I mean, they put themselves at the head of the they split up the medical between the herbal treatment and I guess it's the allopathic and homeopathic type.
Yes, uh-huh.
In the medical and in the schooling, they set that with Carnegie. Then they put themselves at the head of a number of the basic building blocks of a country and have been in control ever since. And so even if one of them dies off, their mission is always there at the top of the minds of anybody that comes in and goes. So it, even when...
You know, I read an article in the Spotlight newspaper one time, and it was talking about the Rockefellers, and I did not know this. I was a subscriber to the Reader's Digest and National Geographic, and then it told about, okay, Larry Rockefeller, Lawrence Rockefeller, heads up the, is, controls the Reader's Digest. Another Rockefeller is the National Geographic. And I just was, and then I, and they gave the subscription, you know, the numbers. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of people that they had their ear. And I remember reading an article in the Reader's Digest. This is when I began to wake up, you know, when I was starting to wake up. I knew about the Federal Reserve and stuff like that. I read an article in the Reader's Digest about the IRS and how they have to, you know, they have this unbridled power. And then it was really like telling on the IRS. But then here's the hook. And this is the way, once you begin to become informed, you start seeing what I call the hooks in an article. Mm-hmm. At the end of the article, it said, everybody has to pay taxes. We all know that. Nobody likes a deadbeat. See? So you read this whole article, and you think, yeah, yeah, yeah. The IRS is, they shouldn't do this, they shouldn't do that, but I have to pay taxes because I'm not a deadbeat. And then you see that, and I got an email recently, and I didn't read the whole thing, but sometimes I just read the subject heading, and I keep it to meaning to file it someplace, that the National Geographic just took a hit at the guns, at gun control.
What did they?
So you see, the they are so slick. The way they do things, they speak to a person's heart. They speak to, they know human nature, and they say so much that is truth that when they throw those hooks in there, it is accepted unconsciously, subconsciously by the individual reading it.
Well, that's because a lot of people have become so dumb and don't even look for underlying stuff or the truth of what's going on.
Yeah, but Katie, you know what? If you aren't informed, you just don't see it, honey.
You know what I find interesting is to hear you say that when I woke up, look at it didn't happen in school, did it?
Oh gosh. No, and I think any of us that didn't go to college are very, very, very fortunate, because it seems that, and maybe not so much, well, it started, oh, that started early on, too, the teachers of the teachers, you know, from what they were doing, but what we learned in history in school was nothing. We got some dates and names. Those weren't lies, but what was left out gave us nothing. And that to me, has become so important to understand the history of all this. Because when we understand it and see that the truth is revealed, the lies are exposed, it's like lights coming on. And maybe, and I don't mean to become esoteric here or whatever, but the darkness that is in this world, I think in pictures, I, if that makes any sense, I think a lot of people do, but mm-hmm. The darkness that is in this world, the evil that is afoot, the lies we have been told, the terrible crimes that have been committed against people, that is the darkness. And the truth is light into the world. And I think about that statement attributed to Jesus, where he says, ye are the light of the world. And I think maybe that is so, that it is when we begin to wake up and we share, and the more people that know the truth, the more light that is in the world, the more difficult it is going to become for them. And the love, because as evil, as there much evil is in this world, there is love, there is beauty, and if we can begin to focus on that and do every day, every single moment of our day, as Jesus said, do unto others, the golden rule, to live our lives as closely as we can to that in every way, shape, and form, and be true to ourselves. Have you ever told a white lie to somebody like, oh, geez, I'm sorry, you know, you didn't...
No, I've never told a white lie.
You didn't make it someplace, and so you told a little lie because you didn't want to hurt somebody's feeling why you didn't go. I got to thinking about that one day, and I thought, that's a lie. I mean, even if it isn't a harmful lie, it's a lie, it's not the truth. I just could have apologized for not being there. I didn't have to make up some kind of a lie why I wasn't.
Right.
And we have to catch ourselves at these things.
Right.
To catch ourselves at these things.
Yes. So, if you were working with Alan Watt, and you've worked with Darren Weeks, have you, or is that...
Darren is our webmaster,
okay.
Melody.
Okay, and he's a great wealth of information, and he's out there doing, you know, trying to spread the information about what this constitutional. I hope I always have to keep looking at the paper. The Constitutional Convention, because like I said, this Continental Congress to me is could be an easy subversion, because I'm seeing some notable names that are getting on board. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, look at in the headline that I'm looking at right now. Okay, this Continental Congress, it's referring to itself as ConCon.
Oh, no.
Yes.
And where's that article from?
It's off the We the People Foundation website.
Thanks.
So here we are right there is your answer. Just to, you know, when I started... asking some people questions about this, what is this thing? And so now I realize, you know, there is something going on there.
But you felt uncomfortable with it, didn't you, Melody?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's wonderful because, you know, I think our intuition, if we would begin to listen to our intuition...
Oh, I've gotten to where my intuition... It's getting,
really honed.
Yes, it's. I think
the more we listen, the clearer it becomes, and I think that's beautiful. You know, I did a. In fact, I want to get the tapes over to Darren to get up on our website. This was back. I don't know. Whatever, 90 around there, 98 or whatever, about 10 hours. With Kelly Nelson on the phony Christian conservative leadership in this country. How many people have been taken in by these, it controlled opposition is what it is. And in fact, that's how Darren became our webmaster, because he was listening. And he said he got so ticked off at Kelly and I because she was telling about Donald Wildman and his connections and who he really is. And Darren said he wondered, God, isn't there anybody they don't trust? But my friend Betty Mills, my friend and mentor, I met Betty in 1992, never met her ever face to face. And she left this realm, this dimension, at the turn of the century, and I never got the hugger, and I always resented that and regretted it. But anyway, I probably had about a 30-year education from Betty, from all the hours we spent on the phone and all of the information and documents that she sent me. It was a slam. I told her one time when we were talking on the phone, and this was true, sometimes I'd get nauseous from all that I was learning so fast. And I told her once, I said, Betty, you make me sick. She said, what? I said, I feel like I want to go up to bed and pull the covers over my head and never come out. But Betty knew about this. Paul Weyrich was one of the biggest ones, one of the most powerful ones of all. And we did this whole series on it. And Darren called me up and he said, I want to make a website as my contribution to the work that you're doing. And then he told me about how ticked off he felt finding out that all these heroes that he had were all phony. And that is a very tough pill to swallow.
Well, don't you get into some of the FEMA camp stuff?
The what?
The FEMA camps. Are you familiar with them?
FEMA, oh. Well, you know, I don't know that we have anything on the website about the FEMA camps, honey.
I thought I saw somewhere where you had something, or did you have a program on it or whatever, or is it just my imagination?
Well, you know what? I did radio from mid-1995 to 2006 or 7, 11, almost 12 years of radio. And, you know, we covered so many subjects and topics. And
well, that's one of the things that attracted me to want to be able to talk to you, is because you had covered so many broad subjects that, I mean, that's one of the things when you get into this is you realize there isn't anything that hasn't been touched by somebody trying to control and bring that in, tie it into the ultimate agenda.
I got an email today that said the topic was Henry Kissinger calls for a new world order again, and I know they're saying it out loud, but I it was just a YouTube thing, a short little interview just recently when Obama got elected, and they were celebrating 30 years of something. And they were asking him about Obama. And, oh, by the way, there's a book online about Henry Kissinger.
Okay, yeah,
on Sweet Liberty in our book section.
Yeah, I was thumbing through that somewhat.
Gary Allen. You know, I was talking one night on the air, and they had first appointed Henry Kissinger to be the head of the commission on 9/11. I said, oh my, that's like the fox watching the hen house. He's right in the hen house. And as I was talking about Henry Kissinger, Chuck walked up and handed me the book. And I looked at it and I said, Kissinger by Gary Allen, and I can't remember the other author, but Gary Allen was the author of None Dare Call It Conspiracy, you know.
Right. And
that was one of the first out of the box that just blew everybody away, but I started reading that book. I told our listeners, I said, well, I guess I've got my reading for tonight. I started reading that book, and I stopped in about a chapter and a half because the book is no longer in print. And I said, Chuck, oh, my God, this has got... I sat for an entire week doing nothing but transcribing that book while my computer was trying to crash. And I had a
friend. What's the name of the book?
It's called Kissinger.
Kissinger,
just
right.
Kissinger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
on a website.
Look in the book section, honey. Oh, my. He
it's
was
at
a
your site, right?
He was a KGB
right.
agent.
Well, Chertoff, too?
Yes. But when you read about how Nixon was set up by Kissinger, I mean, the thing is just awesome. But let me, I listened to this butthead, excuse my language, but I played it back so I could write it down,
uh-huh.
And I've got it right. You know why she's doing this? Because she knows I'm on the telephone and I won't scream at her. Because if I yell at her and say, "You lay down right now," she's quiet. So I'm letting them out again.
Yeah. They have her trained so well.
No, this is a little. I was telling Katie about her. She's a lab mix with a border collie, and when I got. Huh, I've never had a puppy like this before in my life. And when I got looking into them, they described them as miniature nuclear reactors. And that's exactly what she is. And she is so smart that she outdoes me half the time. But I'm not going to yell while I'm here on the air with you. So listen to what Henry Kissinger said. I wrote this down. The guy that was interviewing him was asking him about Obama and what did he think was his most important issues. And Kissinger said, well, he said, there's upheaval all over the world, Pakistan, da-da-da-da-da. He said, but, he said, he can, now this is a quote, he can give new impetus to the American foreign policy, partly because the reception of him is so extraordinary around the world. He said, I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period when really a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. It isn't just a crisis.
Yeah, I heard that.
Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard it too.
Right.
Yep. And then the guy said something about him not having much experience. He said he's appointed an extraordinarily able group of people in both the international and financial fields. Yeah, they're laying their cards open, straight up, face up on the table. But that book, if you read that book, you'll gasp while you're reading it.
I'm going to have to.
I did.
But you know what's so interesting, and this is the point of you know, that brings me back around saying, you know, other than the, I think that I'm in the twilight zone at times when I'm looking through some of the, you know, the truth that you start, you know, stumbling across out there is the fact that these people write it down. They have no qualms about putting it in print and telling us what they're going to do. And what they're going to do, if most of them had a clue what the ultimate goal of what they're going to do, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing, except those that are truly the psychopathic running it. And there are enough of them there.
Well, you know what they call those people, don't you? Useful idiots. They refer to those people that are helping to implement their plans as useful idiots.
And we're the useless eaters.
Yeah, well, I am now. I'm not a producer. There's another one thing I would like to address your attention to, you girls.
Uh-huh.
It is in our shadow government section.
Uh-huh.
Where's shadow government? Okay, here it is. Okay, way down at the bottom of this, I think it's the very last. Wait a minute. No, it isn't in shadow government.
Okay. What are you looking for?
Okay, I'll have to do a search. This is a big website, isn't it? If we do a search for the New Order of Barbarians.
Oh, it's in here, because I just saw it.
In shadow government?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's right down there. It's you know, if you drag your sidebar down all the way to the bottom, it'll be up there
all
at the
way
top.
To the bottom.
Mhm. And it'll be at the top, and then it comes up the New Order of the Barbarians.
Where do you find it? Oh, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it isn't all the way to the bottom. Oh, there's MK Ultra. New Order of Barbarians. Okay, somebody had mailed me a transcript of one half of these three tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And after I got off the air that night, I was sitting on the couch reading it. Chuck was lying with his head in my lap sleeping. And I kept going, "Ah, Chuck, wake up, listen to this." I could not believe what I was reading. And then I called the woman who sent it to me, and I said, "Linda, where is the rest of it? I have got." She sent me the tapes. I transcribed all these tapes.
My goodness.
And the man who did this was Dr. Dunnigan, Lawrence Dunnigan.
That name sounds familiar.
Okay, Dr. Dunnigan was a pediatrician
in
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was at one of their... they had quarterly meetings, the
mm-hmm.
dinner parties, or a dinner and then a speaker. And this Dr. Richard Day was their speaker that night. And he said that Dr. Day told them that they weren't allowed to take notes and they weren't allowed to tape his speech. He said, I have to paraphrase here, but basically I wouldn't have been able to even tell you this a few years ago. But he said, everything is in place. He said, we intend to go into the 21st century with a running start. Everything is in place and nothing can stop us now. And he laid it all out. He laid it out.
Okay, let me go ahead and read some of this. It says, is there a power, a force, or a group of men organizing and redirecting change? Everything is in place and nobody can stop us now. People will have to get used to change. Everything will change constantly. The real and the stated goals. Population control. Permission to have babies. Redirecting the purpose of sex. Sex without reproduction and reproduction without sex. Sex education is a tool of world government. Encouraging homosexuality. Sex. Anything goes. Euthanasia and the demise pill. Limiting access to affordable medical care makes eliminating the elderly easier. Planning the control over medicine. Elimination of private doctors. New difficult to diagnose and untreatable diseases. Suppressing cancer cures is a means of population control. Inducing heart attacks is a form of assassination. And then education is a tool for accelerating the onset of puberty and pushing evolution and much, much more. And that, if I recall, that he did was written down from notes he had to jot down after the meetings.
You had read it, Melody?
And this is from
somewhere
what?
I ran across it and read it, yes.
Wow, honey.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
what is this from? What was that from?
Dr. Dunnigan. What Dr. Dunnigan did, Katie, after he left that that night, he said that he noticed that his colleagues, there were about 75 pediatric physicians there, and he said he noticed that his colleagues didn't seem to be stunned. And Dr. Dunnigan told them before he started talking, you're not going to remember most of what I'm telling you tonight. Okay, and then so Dr. Dunnigan got home and he started taking notes, but he said things would happen, and he'd go, wow, he mentioned this, Dr. Day mentioned this, and he just kept making notes, and finally he sat and did a tape. He did actually three tapes. They were 45 minutes on each side, and then he was interviewed by Engel. What's her name? I had her on the air with me one night, Randy Engel, and the whole thing is transcribed here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was done back in 1969.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Even down to little details like, and I can remember this, when I was little, we had baby doll, but we had a baby doll. And at Christmas time, well, Grandma Margaret would make clothes for my baby. I would get a buggy for her. the maternal instinct was nurtured within us. And he said that the dolls were going to change so that that maternal instinct would be stuffed, I guess. I don't know what happens. And then what do you think happened? Out came the Barbie and Ken dolls. The little girls weren't playing baby dolls anymore. This was all planned. This is the insidiousness of what we have been. And I want to go back to this Kissinger statement when he said, America, you know, that he, to however he said it, lay out of whatever for America, because there's an opportunity for the New World Order to, you know, be here. Well, this is exactly, basically confirming what Alan Watt said, that the United States of America was founded to do exactly what it's doing today. We have military personnel in about 160 countries around the world today, and here we are. You know, I used to cry when, you know, I was an athlete in school and at these events when they would sing the national anthem, I would hold back tears of love for my country and I've said so many times, Father, thank you that I was born in this beautiful, wonderful, free country, because I felt sorry for people in other countries. We were given a dream, and we lived the dream. And then when you begin to wake up from the dream, you realize it is a nightmare. It is a nightmare that we're living in today. I've made the statement to friends recently, you know, that I believe, you know, when you look at history books, the age of reason, the age of this, I said this era will go down in history as the age of insanity, because we are living in an insane world.
Well, you know, one of the things that
the only thing real to me in my mind and my heart that is real in this world is love. And I mean that in every sense of that. I mean compassion, caring about others, caring about ourselves. I mean love in all of its forms. That's the only real thing that is in this world. Everything else is, well, I shouldn't say illusion. I mean, it's real to us, but it's meaningless.
You certainly having to make a huge adjustment when you finally find out it, you know, what makes reality is it has to totally come from you and your relationship with information that is around you.
Yeah, Linda Liotta, Joni Vian's friend, Linda's just absolutely awesome also. And we were talking, she woke up, she was very political, they lived there, her husband worked in Washington, D.C., and she got involved, I think it was during the NAFTA era in 93, and she said she started getting these emails and she was reading stuff that was like, what in the world is this? She thought it was just pure insanity. And she said she started looking into it. And she was open-minded. And she said when she finally realized what was really happening, she said it's like getting socked right in your stomach, right in your solar plexus. It's like a huge hit with a fist in your solar plexus.
Well, I want to go back a little bit more of what the doctor was getting into in his tape there, because there's more here that goes about encouragement of drug abuse to create a jungle atmosphere.
Yeah.
And there's a statement in there.
Will you excuse me for about 5 minutes, hon?
Oh, okay.
you go ahead and share some of that with our listeners, and
okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay, and it says, before the earth was overpopulated, there was a law of the jungle where only the fittest survived. And the same thing would happen with alcohol abuse. would be both promoted and demoted at the same time. The vulnerable and the weak would respond to the promotions and therefore use and abuse more alcohol. Drunk driving would become more of a problem. Stricter rules about driving under the influence would be established so that more and more people would lose their privilege to drive. And then restrictions on travel. This also had a connection with something we'll get he'll get to later on, the overall restrictions on travel, but not everybody should be free to travel the way that they now do in the United States. People don't have a need to travel that way. It's a privilege. And it was a kind of high-handed way it was put. Again, much more in the way of psychological services would be made available to help those who got hooked on drugs and alcohol. And the idea being that in order to promote this drug and alcohol abuse, to screen out some of the unfit people who are otherwise pretty good would also be subject to getting hooked. And if they were really worth their salt, they would have enough sense to seek psychological counseling and benefit from it. So this was presented as sort of a redeeming value on the part of the planners. It was also saying, you think you're bad in promoting these evil things, but look how nice we are. We're also providing a way out, and it says the need for more jails and using hospitals as jails. So more jails would be needed. Hospitals would serve as jails. And any of the legislation and allocations that are being put out there are showing that they're going in this direction hugely. Katie?
Well, here in Colorado, basically one out of every 150 people is in prison right now. People don't realize how extreme our prison system has gotten. And especially once it was privatized, all at once it became its own industry and really is putting a lot of what you read into effect. It's working right now.
And another part of that Second Amendment rights that are starting to disappear, they were also people that were going to war, were getting these PTSD diagnoses, and then they're finding out when they get out that that PTSD diagnosis is killing their ability to be able to have a right to have a gun.
Oh, and it's also limiting them in regard to their resources as far as soldiers. I'm sure that now that they're looking at it, they're looking at some of the soldiers that have been diagnosed with this and sent back to the war, which has become common practice, at least here at Fort Carson, you know, because they don't have a place really to help them here. But if they send them to the war, at least they have an assignment.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that he speaks about here is that some books would just disappear from the libraries.
Oh, and some of them are. That is already happening. Try to go get None Dare Call It Conspiracy. Not there.
Well, I'm finding a lot of movies that aren't available either.
Oh, yeah. Many movies aren't available.
And some of the old classics that you, I mean, try to get, what's the one I want to, it's the Orwell one that it isn't the 1984. Well, not
The Brave New World.
Brave New World.
You can't get that anymore either. Yeah, but so you can order it out of Europe. In the U.S., it's real, you can't even find it, but if you go to the Internet and go over to Europe, they'll sell it to you. I find that interesting.
Yeah, but I don't think it's that cheap.
Oh, no, no, no. And then you have to pay international shipping. So it's kind of prohibitive here.
A couple more things that it, they get into on schools. They say restructuring education is a tool of indoctrination, and more times in schools, but they wouldn't learn anything. And controlling who has access to information, and schools is the hub of the community. And one of the things that, you know, that I'm hearing is that on these FEMA camps that are starting to be talked about and cropping up, that it's going to be the pastors and that sort are going to be the ones that are utilized, and they, and the way that they're tying these people in to utilize them and make them the ones who will encourage the people to go into these FEMA camps. And if you want a good example of this, this is what took place with Katrina.
Yeah, in New Orleans.
Right. And so if we... A lot of these things that are taking place around us, but being when they're done on a wholesale way, we're tried out somewhere around the country. And if we keep our eyes open, we're going to find out that they don't just do an all out. Before they 9/11 happened, and it being turned,
they test the waters.
Yes, they do.
Melody,
mm-hmm.
I noticed you had Dr. Begich on with you at one time.
Yes, I did.
Well, I've recently, I don't know if you've gotten this email, it says something about, read this and you won't ever turn your TV on again. that was the subject heading.
Mm-hmm.
I opened it up and it's an article about the black boxes, switching over from analog to digital.
Uh-huh.
And it creeped me out something terrible, because basically it's the way this was explained, and there was one article by a PhD in there. Of course, I sent it over to Dr. Begich to ask him. I've had him on several times on Sweet Liberty, and I sent it over and asked him, is this true? Because I want to get this around, but I didn't want to send it around to my, email people that without knowing for sure if it's true, but basically it's called the sound of silence.
Okay, you're talking about Truott's work then.
Huh?
You're talking about Dr. Truott's work.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It is him.
We interviewed him a few weeks ago on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the one that was talking about this?
Yes, mm-hmm. He is.
Is this true?
Yes.
That's what he, he's pretty well tries to document.
I'll tell you what, it had the ring of truth to me. I didn't get a response from Dr. Begich, and I guess what I'm going to do is call him. I had him on the air with me not too long before I quit broadcasting, because I wanted the settled once and for all from him, is it true about the cell phones, causing the brain tumors? He said the jury is in.
Yeah.
Because when they get the brain tumors, they're on the side, they use their cell phones.
Right, right.
And he seems to be really, really knowledgeable there. People need to know this.
Right. No,
people need to know this. Now, I have a digital television. I didn't have one, but my sis came here to live and then decided she wanted to go to California to be by her son. And she left her TV. And I said, well, I don't watch television. I have a big dish, but I had canceled over a year ago all of my programming. And I couldn't even stand to watch CNN anymore because it made me nauseous, because you hear those lies. It's dissonance or whatever you call it.
Cognitive dissonance.
Whatever. So I pick my movies. That's my entertainment. I watch a movie just about every single day. There's no television going. There's no radio going around here. And it really helps you to really get in touch, with nature, with your inner self, whatever. But I wonder, even though I don't watch TV, I use that television to watch a movie. And if what he said is true, I wonder is if I'm not watching TV, if I'm not plugged in, well, the TV itself, that's what I want to know.
I'm going to have Dr. Ott back up again in a couple of weeks, too.
Are you?
Yes. So, and I'm sure he's going to get into that a little bit further.
That's a terrible thing.
Well, he was just starting the whole testing on the boxes, right? When we talked to him last time?
Well, he had just come out with that article, I believe,
mm-hmm.
And so. But I don't know how long he had been working on it. So,
Well, as I remember, he was just going to start it. He hadn't even gotten the box yet.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping by the time we interview him, he will have had time to do some testing.
Well, and the only people that need the boxes are people that have the old TVs.
Well, now there's more to it than that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And see, and what they're finding out that the people aren't buying the boxes, and so there's this huge allocation in one of the congressional allocation. I don't know what they call the thing, budget, for paying for these boxes. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, you know what?
$80 million or something.
I'm looking at the clock on my computer, and we got about 4 minutes left.
Uh-huh.
And this 2 hours has gone so fast.
And it's really late.
Give our listening audience your website again.
Oh, sweetliberty.org. I've probably said that 40 times.
Okay, we need to get it in one more time.
Okay, sweetliberty.org. I want to tell you this about these black boxes. Did you see the conspiracy theory with Mel Gibson?
I did, but it was somebody was talking about it recently,
okay,
and
well,
I had to go back and look at it.
Well, then I won't even go into that, but my Chuck was like Mel Gibson with the newspapers. He would get 4 or 5 big newspapers every Sunday, go through them, and he said, you know, people think that the news isn't in the newspapers. It is. But there, one paper carries a little bit, one carries another. He could put a whole series of things together to show what they're really doing. Chuck could do this. That's what Mel Gibson was doing in the conspiracy theory. Well, in 1995, when Chuck and I were first meeting personally because we met on the telephone, he found an article in USA Today, a little tiny, about 2-inch article. Bill Clinton had made the statement that they were going to expedite, or whatever the word would be, the switch from analog to digital. But don't worry, because all you're going to have to do is have a little black box on top of your TV, and the government is going to help you pay for it. I've got the article in my files here.
Oh, I want to see that, because that will... And I bet you Dr. Ott, if he hasn't seen it, would like to.
Oh. Well, I'll go through my Bill Clinton file and see if I can't find it.
Yeah, I mean, because I definitely have found what you're talking about, because I do run across people that are that meticulous in being able to look for news. But you have to spend a lot of time.
He'd come home
doing
from work some evening, and I'd be standing, you know, at cooking dinner, and he'd walk up and hand me the paper and say, "Baby, read this." And I'd look at him and say, "Well, do I have to do it right now?" So then I'd have him read it to me while I was cooking. But he was absolutely brilliant at finding these things. Anyway, I know that we're going to have to go. And Melody, thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for asking me to be with you girls tonight.
Well,
it's been a pleasure.
Yes, it has. And we'll like to have you back again.
Well, you just give me a call anytime, my dear.
Okay. And, again, this has been K-H-E-N, K-H-E-N-L-P 106.9 Salida. And this is Truth Quest. And we just have had Jackie Petru and my co-host, Katie. And coming up next is Joe Frank and... did I say it all? I think I did. So good night.
Good night.
Good night.